we present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a cutting scene in the Isle of Wight County Press, read for us now by Peter Donaldson.
If you've recently found a dead red squirrel and put it in your freezer, meaning to hand it in for counting, Helen Butler needs to hear from you now.
To Mother James of Freshwater for that enigmatic clipping. Now let's meet the teams. Please welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Mark Steele. Facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Rebecca Front. Francis, who's come out and admitted he does want to stand after all.
Wondered if you'd be able to resist that phrase. It's old Polly Portillo. He has thrown his hat in the ring. Sombrero, I think it was. And actually, as you say, this is perfectly true. He did put out a statement saying that lots of Tory MPs were going to come out for him. He is as obsessed with all these do not hunters as everyone else is. And then Anne Widdecombe didn't come out for him. The day he announced that, she was storming around television studios, getting angrier and angrier, saying, "I'm never going to be under Michael Portillo." And I thought, well, that's obvious. And she said she particularly objected to the fact that he was surrounded by... He had this sort of coterie of backbiters, which is obviously some gay slang I'm not up on. And Tebbit has done his bit as well about the pillow biters and things, saying, you can't have a leader who doesn't have children. And actually, if you look at politicians' children, on the whole, they're nothing but an embarrassment. I mean, Tebbit's dear friend Margaret Thatcher, I mean, how much of an asset was Mark Thatcher to his mother? Not a lot, I'd say. I mean, James Major, when he went off with that woman from Marks and Sparks. I mean, they're just nothing but trouble. Portillo will not have any embarrassments like that. That's the one embarrassment he won't have. I mean, he's going to have plenty of others, but he won't have that. So he's bound to win, I should think.
Wouldn't it be fantastic if Widdecombe won, though? Oh, it'd just be marvellous, wouldn't it?
They've got all this Getty loot now, haven't they? John Paul Getty II, last week, they gave them £5 million. He normally gives his money to the MCC and people like that.
Well, he likes to give his money to sort of cultural institutions, old museums that are full of archaic relics. And they thought, oh, here's one I've heard about. Probably thought it was the Conservative Party experience.
I like the fact that Michael Portillo, apparently, due to this anxiety that the tabloids were going to drag him through the mud because of his declared past homosexuality, decided to run away on holiday for a little bit. And where did he choose to go? He went to Morocco. and was then photographed by the world's press dancing riotously at a gospel concert. You just think, if ever a man is asking for the headline Dancing Queen, you know? Unbelievable.
Yes, the search for a new Tory party leader has begun. Mr. Portillo represents the softer side of conservatism. If elected, he will let asylum seekers live.
It was a brilliant one when they first came out with a policy on the asylum seekers all being put in camps. And one of the spokespeople there was on Newsnight. And he was asked, so these camps then will be like prisons? And I promise you these exact words. He said, no, they won't be prisons because people will be free to leave, but they will be arrested if they do.
Two points to Francis. Mark, which American tourist is getting a less than warm welcome?
Bush.
You don't need to tell him.
Can't be too
right.
Careful.
Oh, but Francis knows all the answers. I have to check.
Well, I've heard of the President of the United States, yes.
George Bush, less than warm welcome. Yes, the Swedes have chucked stuff at him, haven't they? In fact, nobody seems to like him in Europe. Except for Blair, of course, and Bush clearly doesn't really like Blair, or probably doesn't know who he is, in fact. Who's this guy stalking me here? And Blair keeps sort of wandering around saying, oh, please let me be your friend. Oh, the other one, he let me be his friend. Nobody else seems to like him at all. Wasn't even properly elected. The system in America seemed to be to have the election and then go, oh, don't bother with the counting, that just holds everything up.
President George W. Bush met European leaders at his first EU summit in the city of Gothenburg, but was disappointed he didn't get to meet Batman there. Bush is accompanied by a team of linguists working round the clock to translate his every word into English. 2 points to Mark. Rebecca, which reshuffle ended this week with the dealer hitting the jackpot?
Presumably this is the latest episode of Robin's Nest, is it? The sitcom.
We're getting there,
involving
yes.
Robin Cook and Jack Straw. Is that what we're talking about?
Yes, well, jackpot as well.
If it's the story I'm thinking it is, Robin Cook got... Well, apparently it's a demotion to leader of the house and was not very happy about it, but he did get to keep the house, which is number one Carlton Gardens, which is apparently an enormous tax burden for anybody. Presumably that's why Jack Straw doesn't want it. So he was told that he would get to keep the house to keep Gaynor happy. But then he was told that, in fact, Jack Straw and his wife were still going to host parties for foreign dignitaries there. So that, although, yes, they could still live in the house, they would actually have to live in the servants' quarters. Which apparently has led to lots of wags around Parliament dubbing him the new Hudson, which I think is sort of rather cruel when you think about it. But, yes, they're living together, as are Portillo and somebody.
No, Mandelson and Mandelson. Sean Woodward.
Mandelson, that's right, yes, Mandelson and Sean Woodward are living together. They're all living together. They're all in each other's pockets. It's all a conspiracy.
But the jackpot bit is that Blair awarded himself a £47,000 pay rise because he'd had such a busy week sacking 18 ministers and giving his secretary a peerage and doing all these things that he thought he deserved a little performance bonus. So gave himself nearly £50,000 a year more.
Yes.
That's reasonable, isn't it?
Wasn't in the Labour manifesto, that thing, I don't think. Not that I noticed, anyway, but...
There was an MP who was asked about this. I saw this on the television, Fraser Kemp. Yesterday, I think it was. Sorry, he was asked on Thursday, I think. What day is yesterday?
Tomorrow.
Right. He was asked on the television one morning... And the interviewer said, exactly as Francis just said, well, this wasn't mentioned before the election that Blair was going to do this. And Fraser Kemp's answer was, no, but he did announce it only just after the election. Not seeming to notice that there is a gap between these 2 points, before and after. It's as if you went to Timothy McVeigh's cell now and said, here is the ice cream you ordered, Mr. McVeigh. The 3 days' lateness would be of some significance.
Well, it makes you wonder why he bothered to have an election at all, because his secretary, Sally Morgan, is now Baroness Morgan and has immediately been made a minister. And if he fills his government with his friends by just giving them peerages, it cuts out the slight uncertainty that involved him submitting himself to the electorate.
Were they skint probably before then, MPs? Is this it? Is that why they needed a 47% rise, whatever it is? Were they broke? Were they all having to...
They are. That's why they all have to lodge in attics in Sean Woodward's house.
The cabinet meetings must start about 11:30 so that everybody can use their travel card.
The Prime Minister was at pains to point out that 40% of his £47,000 extra pay will be eaten up by tax, and the rest will go on Ewan's bar bill over the summer holidays. Keith Vaz was admitted to hospital on Sunday, a difficult but necessary operation to remove a dangerous clot then followed. Alan, your piece of music. We don't need no education. We don't need no full control. Right. Alan, who's doing her level best to improve standards in schools?
Do we have a new Minister for Education?
We do.
Is this the woman who's doing it?
Yes. Not singing, no.
What?
Not singing, no.
No, I'm
sorry. Yeah.
Oh, it's that woman, the hockey player. There's a bandy woman who played scrum half for Newport or something. There's a picture of her in the paper, and the headmaster had been at her like a ferret during her earlier years. I mean, they didn't do that, but I think they were just very close friends when she was at school, and the headmaster said he hadn't seen her for years, and now would he come back and open something? Not his flies. It was invited her back to the school behind the bicycle shed, and she turned out to be the Estelle Morris, the Minister of Education. I saw that in the Sport. Well, she was a strapping woman. Those tremendous knees looked like Haig's head, if you remember Haig. And this woman is now Secretary of What Passes for Education in this country.
Well, we might be able to get something usable out of that.
Francis knows, you read the papers.
It's all about AS levels, isn't it?
Yes.
Nothing to do with hockey. It's
AS levels. This is the thing, bloke who said, I made a mistake, I invented AS, and it's all rubbish.
Yeah.
She wants them, does she?
Education Secretary Esther
Morris.
She knows
nothing. She's a hockey player.
Education Secretary and hockey player Estelle Morris has announced an urgent review of the AS level exam system. Once students have now passed the AS levels, they're allowed to take the A2, which goes to the job centre in Dover. Excellent. We start round two with a small ad from the local press in Tavistock.
Reward. Stolen, apparently by common thieves, between the hours of 12 a.m. and 8 a.m. on Saturday morning from my land alongside the A386... a quantity of blue signs with the words, Vote Conservative.
Thanks to Jeff Stanfield. Francis, what was plain to see provided you stealthily kept yourself mobile?
It's the stealth bomber.
It is.
Turns out, another triumph for British technology, that the stealth bomber, which I think has cost $60 billion or pounds or something, is completely useless because it can be spotted by mobile phone masts in England, which cost 100,000 quid or something. This little bit of BT technology means that when the stealth bomber is flying over Chislehurst or somewhere, as it often does, the masts can detect it. As long as people keep making mobile phone calls, anyone from Saddam Hussein to Osama bin Laden can work out where the stealth bomber is just by using their mobile. The trouble is that they'll always be under the impression that the stealth bomber is actually on the train between Shenfield and Liverpool Street.
How do they know it's a stealth bomber? If it's not invisible, it's not a stealth bomber.
But it's invisible to radar, you see, but it's not invisible,
it's invisible
to mobile phones.
That's why it's a stealth bomber. I mean, the bloke obviously conned the Pentagon out of a fortune. He said, I've built this invisible plane, and I want £800 million. Where is it? It's over there. Oh. How can you know what the stealth bomber looks like if the only one that's never been seen hasn't been seen?
Because they keep printing pictures of it in the paper, rather helpfully.
Pictures of what? They haven't. It doesn't. It's invisible. It can't have a picture.
The picture they keep printing is clearly some kind of origami thing, anyway, because it's well, sort of angled.
It's just an artist's impression. You know, it's like in a courtroom when they have a picture of Jeffrey Archer, and it's not really him.
Well, it's painted because it's painted in this stealth paint as well. I do remember years ago, Alan Clark. Well, not that
stealth
many years
paint.
Ago.
Is,
well,
there, was, is there yeah, a there Dulux is. Colour?
Well, no, but they have this special
stealth
paint.
Grey. That'd be lovely for the
which is invisible to radar and bounces off radar or whatever. And Alan Clark actually tried to get some of this to paint one of his cars in it because he had this idea that he could then do 150 up the motorway and the radar traps wouldn't get him.
No, but it would spot him. You just see a bloke sitting down doing 150 miles an hour. What a fool he was.
Scientists have discovered that a new mobile phone mast at the Roke Manor Research Lab in Britain can detect the precise location of US stealth bombers. As news of the threat to the bomber reached the Pentagon, alarm bells started ringing, along with the Mission Impossible theme, Beethoven's Fifth, and all the other mobiles. Mark, why is our audience begging to hear another news quiz question about Britain's railways?
Oh, they're all so hard.
Begging is the key word there.
Stopping people. Is this it? Are they stopping people?
Well, there's always a question about rail tracks, so you might as well assume it's something to do with that.
We know this.
Yep, go on.
We know a bit of it. Rail track has been told not to beg. That's the bit we know. If you'd like any more on the stealth bomber, you've come to the right bloke. But, yes, rail track has been said, don't beg. Get your trains on time. Or rather, whatever they do. They're rails, aren't they? Get your rails on time. And you'll be all right. That's the top and bottom of my knowledge of the integrated transport policy. Whatever happened to Prescott? Is he living in anybody's house? I bet he's not living with Mandelson. There's a thought, isn't it? Just popping down for a cup of sugar.
Got a spare egg, Peter.
Anyway, that's what it is. Rail track has been told not to beg.
By whom?
By the person charged with these things. It's not just, anybody comes in and goes up to rail track and says that. They get a flea in their ear.
Is it Byers or one of those people?
No, it's the rail regulator, Tom Windsor.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds like a minor royal, doesn't it?
But they do be, and then the government gives in, and they just sort of stand outside railway stations and go, you've got to spare 50 million for a rail network. And the government says, oh, go on then, this is the last time.
Rail Transport has confirmed they'll now be forced to raise the additional funding through alternative sources, though if they can shift 2 billion copies of the big issue by Christmas, they'll have done very well indeed. Railtrack reacted angrily to Mr. Windsor's allegation that it was guilty of using meaningless words and phrases. A spokesman said, many trees grow over the stagnant pond. But only the butterfly laughs at dawn. Railtrack has warned that if it doesn't get the $2 billion, it may go out of business, so we can all keep our fingers crossed. 2 points. No, not 2 points. 1 point to Alan. Rebecca, who did not have sexual relations with that bridesmaid?
Bill Clinton was playing golf in the grounds of a hotel in Yorkshire where a wedding was taking place. And he decided just to be sort of matey and got chatting with a few people, and they invited him in for drinks. And, yeah, he had his photo taken and he took part in the video. He was very game about the whole thing. The only thing he declined to do was to leave a memento on the bride's dress. He said he'd done that once already. Once bitten, twice shy. But, no, he seems good on him. Apparently, there was a big tax dispute while he was in Yorkshire about whether or not he should be classified, because he was there to do a talk, whether he should be classified as a statesman or an entertainer. I don't know why I raised that, really. The two things are mutually exclusive, obviously.
He was playing golf and he didn't give her a memento.
No.
Didn't even sign one of his balls. That seems astonishing. The man has no sense of pun.
Bill Clinton interrupted a game of golf in the grounds of a Yorkshire hotel to drop in unannounced on Rebecca and Justin Garnett's Reading reception. He laughed and joked as he chatted to the happily married couple, even sharing a cigar with the bride's father. They said afterwards, Bill Clinton coming really put the icing on the cake. So, before we start the final round, here's a cutting from the Gloucestershire Echo.
A girl from Upton St. Leonard's was flashed at by a man as she walked home on Thursday. The flasher is described as a white male in his 40s, about 5'9" tall, with a limp... Sorry, with a limp.
Thanks, Richard, for the bishop's cleave. For that, well, I hesitate to call a clipping. Francis, listen to this.
Drive safely, darling. There's a long, long road. Mind how you go, drive safely, darling. Mind how you go, drive safely, darling.
Oh, wonderful song. I'd completely forgotten that. They had a tune in those days, didn't they? Sorry, Alan. Francis, what drove someone to perform an emergency stop when they reached 82 in a built-up area?
It's Phyllis, the driving instructor. Is that it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you've just given the answer. She's an 82-year-old driving instructor who's retired. 2 points. She's been a driving instructor for well over half a century, but she's decided to call it a day because her husband died, and it hasn't been the same since then, except when she was talking about her husband, she said that all they ever did was argue in the car about driving because he was a useless driver, and so she would sit there saying, no, you don't do it like that, no, you put your hand on the steering wheel, and the joy had gone out of it without her husband to argue with, so she's packing it in. Poor thing.
I wonder if you can get old person driving lessons where you learn to drive like an old person at 18 miles an hour in the middle of the road and then get to a speed bump and get out and pick the bloody thing up and take it.
In Clerkenwell Road, well, you know this, Francis, it's called a grazing road in Clerkenwell Road.
The chap who directed the traffic.
There's a place, oh, he's still there, that slightly dippy bloke, but above it, it says the Italian driving school. You know, can you imagine? You know, which finger to put up now? How to drive with your elbows and hunk your horn. Yes. There was another very good old people. That lady called Ames or something, who lived to be 113, is now Britain's oldest woman. You saw her. It was good.
Drinks 4 pints of Guinness a night.
Well, I thought that. She attributed her longevity to 4 pints of Guinness a night, but I thought it must be the exercise. If you drink 4 pints of Guinness a night, she'll be up, and running throughout the night. Probably slim as a flute to give Sebco 4 metres and catch him up at the bend, you know? Wonderful.
There were two other nice driving stories, which I'm just going to mention because they probably won't come up now. One was this lay preacher in Wales who unfortunately got done because he'd said that he didn't need motor insurance or road tax because of the divine presence watching over him. That was a great line to have. The other one, of course, was the Queen's Jaguar, which was taken in for a major refit, and they discovered a pornographic magazine and a swastika round the back of one of the seats. I thought, you know, the poor guy's 80 now, you know, give him a break. Have some fun.
2 points to Francis Mark. Which Homeric utterance has been adopted by scholars of linguistics?
Ah, I know this one. This is the first question I've been able to get right in about the last 8 times I've been on it. Yeah, there's a new dictionary that's come out this week that's got various words in it that are sort of colloquial words and so on. And one of them is Homer's dome that he says when he bangs his head or whenever anything goes wrong, as it does sort of frequently on The Simpsons. And so dough is now, I'm not quite sure how it's spelled, I think it's D apostrophe O-H. Dough is now officially a word in the dictionary.
What does it mean?
Bollocks. I think that's what it is. It's got dough, expression, colloquial, brackets, bollocks.
Correct.
But there's all sorts of... But yeah, there's the weakest link, I think, is now a phrase that's officially in there, and Big Brother.
So they're all bollocks.
Big Brother is, incidentally, that is astonishingly banal, isn't it? You do think if someone stood up in the Big Brother house and said, you know, I've just been reading about how the Burmese military torture dissidents by beating the soles of their feet, someone would go, oh, well, I'd hate that because I've got very sensitive feet. I didn't really watch much of it in the first series, but what I thought was they missed a trick because that guy, Mad Dog Adair, in Northern Ireland, they needed to find somewhere to lock him up, and it was just at the same time as someone in the Big Brother house. They got rid of that nasty Nick bloke, and they were looking for a replacement, and I thought, well, that just would have put him in there. It would have made the dialogue much more interesting, wouldn't it? Who'd like to make the nominations?
But also, when there are people who are genuinely homeless, like Mandelson and Robin Cook, you know, they could perfectly well go. Must be a spare bed somewhere in the house.
It's 5:30, and Pete has gone a little bit mad. He keeps insisting to the chickens that he's not a quitter.
Robin Cook would be the one who lets his towel drop in front of the camera.
God, it was depend what he pegged it on in the first place. Dough, Homer Simpson's much-imitated cry of exasperation, has found its way into the latest online edition of the OED. DocuSoap has also appeared for the first time in the dictionary, an entry which states, television programme which is as interesting as watching paint dry. Coincidentally, the series Watching Paint Dry has just been recommissioned for a second series of BBC starring Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen, Carol Smiley and its new star presenter, William Hague. Ellen, your last question. Which plonkers are going bonkers about conkers?
This is Norwich, isn't it? It's Norwich City, home of Delia Smith and all that. And they're chopping down horse chestnut trees as a health and safety initiative because conkers can fall on you. The fact that they've been doing that ever since trees were taller than people seems irrelevant, but Norwich is very worried that it's got these conker trees and people walk under them and might get struck by a conker and presumably sue Norwich or God or something. So they've chopped them down, which is awful.
Well, they're about to chop them down, yeah.
Sounds well, very... by the repeat, though, we'll chop them down, yeah.
It sounds very Norwich-y sort of thing to do, though, doesn't it? Can you imagine a council going, oh, you want to watch them conkers? One of them goes in your eye, be rum, I'll do.
Norwich City Councillor. Oh, sorry, did you want to add anything on?
Don't be silly.
Norwich City Council are planning to cut down 20 horse chestnuts because falling conkers could hurt and distract children. Generations of children have named their toughest conkers in honour of the number of victories they've secured, such as the Niner, the 25er, and toughest of all, the Prescott. Before we reveal the final scores, we're going to hear the clippings the teams have brought along. Francis.
Simon, this is from The Independent, and it's on an official report on how acutely ill old people are treated in hospital. The report says that the care of older people is mainly deficient in fundamental aspects of nursing, failing far too often to meet their basic needs for food, fluid, rest, activity, and elimination.
Mark.
The Irish Times. Claim over glue mishap settled. A forklift driver who allegedly suffered respiratory injuries when he became stuck in a spillage of quick-drying superglue has settled his damages claim against his employer. Mr. Paul Douglas of West Dublin had claimed he became trapped when he went to the rescue of a woman who was stuck on all fours in the glue. They confuse this with an episode of Terry and June.
Rebecca.
Two that you can choose from. Pub team sees stars on tour. They rolled out the red carpet when footballers from Stockport arrived in Prague for an end-of-season tour. The match was to be covered by Czech radio and the national press. The visitors were surprised by the welcome because they were Stockport Town FC, a Sunday amateur pub team, not Stockport County of the First Division, as their hosts believed. The penny didn't drop until halfway through the 14-1 hammering. One defender, David Bunyan, 38, said, "Some of our lads were flagging after 10 minutes. We got there on Friday morning and have been on the beer all day and night." The goalie, Tony Gravel, a 34-year-old salesman, said, "We held them right up until the kickoff." And the other one is from the New Zealand Herald, sent in by Christine Carter. And it's an advert, and it says, "Surprise your Valentine with a Stanner stairlift."
Alan.
I tore this out of Wednesday's Times, Simon. Lord Archer of Weston-super-Mare instructed his secretary to buy designer gifts for Andrina Colquhoun, his mistress, and a string of other girlfriends, the Old Bailey was told yesterday. Angela Pepiot, Lord Archer's personal assistant, said that the multimillionaire novelist sent her to Harrods, the jewellers Asprey and Garrard, Gucci, and the designer shoe shop Bruno Marley, in addition to many special trips to the chemist.
Thank you. Now let's look at the final score. The runners-up have a very creditable 15 points, but this week's winners, Alan Corran and Rebecca Front. And before we leave you, here's an item from the Wellingborough and Rushton Telegraph, sent in by Joy Young of Rushton.
To entertain you at the Dolben Arms tomorrow lunchtime is vocalist Suzanne Kern. Best wishes go to Rose the landlady for a speedy recovery.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Green, Mark Steele, Rebecca Front and Alan Corran. The chairman was Simon Hoggart, and the news was read by me, Peter Donaldson. The chairman's script was written by Dave Cohen, Tom Jameson and Simon Littlefield, and the producer was Lucy Armitage.